Good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from Bobby on Fire, and my friend John is on Zoom, and I don't think you can hear him, but John is...
Hi, Bobby.
All right, maybe you heard that. John is joining us through Zoom, and I'm going to tell a story this week that I think is interesting. It's always been one of my favorite stories about large incidents and... things that have happened along the way. This has many things that I think are funny. John doesn't, as often as the case, doesn't think it's funny. He thinks it's maybe a little sad, but not sad because someone got hurt, but just, you'll get the idea. And I'll tell you when I get to the part that I think is funny and when John doesn't think it's funny. But this is back in the early 2000s somewhere, and I was on an incident management team, you know, and for those of you who remember, incident management teams are those groups of about 50 people that go in to manage large fires, large incidents like hurricanes, 9/11, landslides, whatever the incident is, the incident management teams are that framework of leaders and managers that supervise the firefighting or whatever the effort is. In this case, it was a hurricane. So we get a call that we're going to go down to a hurricane. And when there were hurricanes coming in when I was working, oftentimes they might stage a couple teams in different locations because they don't know exactly where the hurricane's going to go. So they might bring, and there might be a couple places that need help. So in this case, our incident management team was staged in a city in the south, and they said, okay, you guys are going to wait here, and you're going to, you know, we're going to wait, and then we're going to figure out when or where we're going to send you. So this involves FEMA. It involves the state governors and the agencies for the states who are requesting the help. And so we were staged in this city, and we get a call, around 9 o'clock at night from our incident commander and gathers up the team. We're using the hotel meeting rooms, you know. FEMA was there. And they said, okay, you're going to be going to this particular city. And you're going in to assess the need and then to fill in to help wherever they need the help. So this is typically, you know, distributing food and water and not being the actual people who do the distributing, because it's usually the National Guard, reserves and folks like that, the military, doing a lot of that, but helping organize for all that. So here we are, 9 o'clock, and the team is going to leave and drive for about 4 or 5 hours to get to this city or this county to help then engage. Now, for those of you who are on incident management teams and are not firefighters, don't get insulted by this, but I got to tell you, there's nothing more frustrating than trying to caravan with 50 people in, 20 cars and SUVs and trucks, because as you can imagine, we just left and someone's got to go to the bathroom. And the incident commander wants to make sure we all stick together. And then we all pull into the rest area. Invariably, someone didn't get to hear on the radio that we're actually pulling into the rest area, so they kept going. And then someone needs to get gas because their vehicle doesn't have a tank as big. And now, what should have been a 4-hour drive turns into an 8-hour drive. And those of us on the team that there are the firefighters, you know, we're frustrated as can be. It's driving me crazy when this happens. And so the incident commander this evening, we're sitting in the hotel and he says, okay, we're going to leave at 4 o'clock in the morning and we're going to, or 6 o'clock in the morning, whatever. And we're going to get on the road, we're going to carpool, and he's, you know, giving us the whole thing. And I can just see, this is going to be horrible. It's going to take us forever to get there. We're going to lose people from the finance section. I have no doubt about it. They're going to see a little tourist stand. I'm sorry, my friends from finance, but you know it's true. You know it's true. Finance section, they're going to be pulling into the tourist section to pick up a sombrero or some kind of, I don't know. And so I can see this coming. I don't want any part of this caravan. So I say with a completely straight face, I think maybe I now I was an operations section chief, but I was like the junior operations section chief at this time on this national team. This was a national type one incident management team, kind of a big deal. And I was like the junior ops chief on the team. And there's three of us on this assignment, two or three of us. So I said with a straight face, I believe I need to go ahead early and get there and do an assessment so when the team shows up, we can be ahead of the curve. I can have already figured stuff out and blah blah blah, you know. Well, it was all a big lie. I just didn't want to ride and drive with all these people. Now, remember last week's story about my humor, you know, but the deputy incident commander, there's two incident commanders on the team. The deputy incident commander was a fire chief from a small department that I had worked for previously, and he knew me. And he knew I was full of crap. That he knew exactly what I was trying to avoid. He knew I was just trying to avoid this big caravan of 20 vehicles driving down the road, or 15 vehicles, you know. So I wait for him to look at me and say, "Oh, you're full of crap, Scopa. You're going to go with the rest of us." But he knew what I was up to. He said, "I think that's a good idea. And I think I should go with Bobby. I think the two of us should go." So the incident commander and everybody else is like, "Oh yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, good idea. You guys go ahead, and then when we get there, when we show up, you'll have it all figured out." Well, it's all true. We were going to do all that, but the real reason was just to get away from this whole mess, which turned out to be true. It was a hodgepodge when I heard them all coming in later that day. Or the next day when they finally got there, it was a big mess, and people did run out of gas, and people did stop for tourist things, and you know, I'm telling you. So yeah. Anyway, so finance section, I apologize, but you know it's true. I'm sure I'll hear from some of them. Maybe it's some of the planning section too. But anyway, I won't name names. So now, more of the serious part of the story. So this is hurricanes, a serious hurricane, a major hurricane hits this coastal town, and there is mass confusion. As we get closer and closer into where the hurricane was, the interstate highway signs are down, so you don't know, you know, you're trying to navigate your way to this town where they want us to set up this county. Well, we had to use GPS. Now, in those days, our GPS system, you know, a little handheld GPS, it's not like on your phone now. These were little handheld GPS systems, and we needed that to find our way to the County Emergency Operations Center. And that's, you know, all counties, I assume all counties have emergency operations centers or something similar. And that's where all the organization is going on. That should be all the planning. That's where all the response is planned for, with all the different agencies. And at an emergency operations center, you should have representatives at that location from all of the different police agencies, all the different fire agencies, from the utility companies. You know, power, and if there's more than one power company, you need representatives from each of the power companies, gas companies, the water bureaus from the county or the cities. You need all of that stuff there so you can coordinate and you can plan. This area is coming up, you know, the is coming, you know, power is being restored in this area. We still don't have water in that area. Red Cross is there. And it's organized in such a way, it's supposed to be organized in such a way where these people sit in the same areas next to each other. So the police agencies all sit in one group of tables. The fire and medical, they all sit in one area. The private ambulance companies, they all sit in one area. The non-governmental agencies, they all sit in an area. So, and that way, so they can communicate with each other and they can plan each other. And you know where, if you are an agency, say you're the you're with a medical agency, and you've got people who depend on power to run their oxygen generators that, you know, a lot of people use these days instead of the tanks, you need to know when the power's coming on. And if the power's not coming on, you might need to tell the medical agency or the medical transport, whoever's doing that, private ambulance company, that they need to go and pick up a person because you're getting information that someone's running out of oxygen. So all of this coordination work is going on at an emergency operations center. Now, when we arrived at the scene, the assistant or the fire chief, friend of mine, who was the incident, the deputy incident commander, he and I walked in. Well, we see this emergency operations center, and from the outside, it's almost brand new. It is state of the art looking. And we walk in, the doors are all open. It's like an auditorium. Imagine an auditorium like a college lecture hall where the floor is kind of sloped a little bit, and there's all these tables all set up, all pre, you know, it's all furnished to be an operations, an emergency operations center. And there's a stage above, sitting up a little higher in front, with big screens, big TV screens, or projection screens up in front. And that's where you would normally show the current situation. You would talk, you know, you would have information displayed up on those screens about the conditions in different neighborhoods. You know, you'd have a spreadsheet that would, so you could glance up and see what was going on. And maybe on the other screen, it might be the Weather Channel just wrote, you know, going through without sound, so you could see updates on the weather. This emergency operations center was well built. It had satellite dishes up. It was built such a way everything survived the hurricane. The hurricane went right through this area, and so it was equipped. It was ready for business. However, when we got there, it was an absolute chaotic scene. If you can imagine going into a lecture hall, how the doors like would be in the back of the room and people would come in, but from the back of the room, walking down down towards the stage. And then there's like doors on the sides that were like, would be like emergency exits. Well, those emergency exits were propped open. The doors in the back of the room were propped open, and people are just walking in and out of the emergency operations center. They were just coming and going, and it was just chaos inside there. People are talking to each other, but there's no one in control. There's no one managing what's happening. And on the screen, on the screens above the stage is what? Football games. Yes. So it must have been a Saturday, come to think of it, because we passed some sports fans going to their games on our way down to this area. And so that was what was on the screens, is football games, because this is the South, man, and you don't interrupt football season for a frickin' hurricane. Jeez, are you crazy? So the deputy incident commander and I are looking around trying to figure out who's in charge here. So we introduce ourselves to the county emergency manager. Now the emergency manager, she is kind of like the overarching authority, person responsible, and there should be an emergency operations center manager. So there's a person in charge of the emergency operations overall, and then there's a person who's supposed to be running the center. And so we get introduced to these people, and we tell them our team is coming en route. We don't tell them that they're going to be delayed because they had to stop for the bathroom 14 times and stop at the stand for, tourist trinkets. But they're on their way, we say. And so we're getting kind of the lay of the land, and we're talking to each other, the incident commander and I, and we're shaking our heads. It's like, oh my God, what's going on in that emergency operations center floor? That has got to get cleaned up because the work isn't getting done. So the team shows up finally, and we start to engage. Now, as an operations section chief and firefighter, you know, I always wanted to be out in the field. I always wanted to be out managing the folks, directing the firefighting. And those guys that were the other ops chiefs, they were senior to me, they assumed I wanted to be out in the field. And the incident commander said, someone needs to be in here and mentor this lady who is in charge of the operations, emergency operations center, the floor. Someone needs to be in there and help her get that started. And I just thought that was going to be a crazy, kind of a cool opportunity. And so I said, I'll do it. And they looked at me and they said, and the incident commander and the other ops chiefs, they said, you want to work in the EOC? And I said, yeah, I think this should be interesting. And I said, great, because they were happy that I wasn't bitching because I wanted to be out in the field, you know. And so they said, okay. So I go and get on the computer because they've got all the internet working because they had everything hooked up and everything was working great. So I get on the internet because I'm not an expert on how to run an EOC. I knew what needed to get done, but I didn't have great expertise on how to run one. So I got online real quick and I go to the FEMA website and I start downloading and reading all the materials about how you run an EOC. And so it's like, okay, yeah, well, I kind of knew this. Yeah, okay, this makes sense. Oh, this is interesting. I didn't realize that. Oh, okay, good. So I spent maybe a half an hour, you know, it's just like I ever studied for my exams in college, you know. I studied for a half an hour and said, okay, I'm good. I think we got this. Let's get to work. So I get the lady who is in charge of the Emergency Operations Center, and I start talking to her. And I said, look, first thing we've got to do is shut the doors and have everybody come through the main entrance and start controlling who's coming in, who's going out. Because you got Farmer John walking in with his dog looking for his buddy who's on the fire department to, I don't know what. I mean, there was just all sorts of stuff going on. It was too chaotic. We got to get control of who's there. And these are the people who need to be here. Like I said before, representatives from each of the fire departments, each of the fire agencies, the medical transport agencies, all the utility companies need to be there. The Red Cross and any other NGO, non-governmental organization like the Baptist Church Men's Organization. They do a lot of feeding on these incidents. Whoever those are, we got to get them, and we got to get them in their groups. So I made little signs and I put them out on the tables. Now people aren't paying any attention to me. They don't know who I am. It's loud as heck in there and they're not paying attention to anyone. They're just using this space as a workspace. They know they're supposed to be there, but they don't know why they're supposed to be there. So this little lady who was in charge, now she's probably my age. At that time, I was probably, I don't know, maybe I was 50, late 40s probably. She was probably my age. And I said, okay, here's what you got to do. You got to go up on the stage here, and we're standing off to the side on the stage. You got to get up there. You got to get everybody's attention, and you've got to start going through this information with them and tell them how we're going to set this up to be organized over the next 2, 3 weeks, because this recovery is going to take that long. Okay, and she's very timid. Okay, all right. And I said, now look, are you ready? Because, here's the outline of what you got to say. This is your job. This is your business. This is you. This is your facility. They're all here, and you've got to be the leader. Okay, all right. And so she's like trying to get their attention. Excuse me, excuse me. Well, no one can hear her. Now, whenever I think about this, I think about the movie Police Academy, where the little cop was in training and she's like, stop, stop, or I'll shoot. It was kind of like that. This lady was just, she couldn't raise her voice above the din of, 75 people in this hall, kind of making all this racket. And so finally, I said, hold on a second, hold on a second. So I use my best fire chief voice and I say, listen up, everybody, listen up. And everybody turns around, like, what? I said, this is so and so. And I give her name. She is the emergency operations center manager. She is the leader of this group and she has got a message for you. So let's pay attention for a few minutes here and let's get ourselves organized. Now, keep in mind, this is the morning after the hurricane went through. The hurricane went through that night, and now this is the next morning. Maybe it's noon by now. And I try to get everybody's attention, and I give her the floor. Well, her voice couldn't carry. They didn't have a microphone. It couldn't carry her voice. And people are trying to be polite and listen, but she kind of loses them within a minute. They're not listening to her anymore. They gotta go back to what they were doing. And she is sitting there talking to herself in this little voice, because, excuse me, I need to get your attention. It's like, this is not working. Now, she walks off the stage and I follow her and I said, oh, come on, it's gonna be fine. We're gonna do this and it's gonna be okay. And I realize she's crying. The tears are just flowing down her face. She is freaked out. And I said, hey, it's okay. I'll get things started. You go collect yourself, go wash your face. It'll be fine. It's gonna be good. We're gonna get through this. This is a tough time. I said, so don't worry about it. We're gonna get through this. Go, wash your face, get back together, and I'll go and get things started. So I go out and I start saying to everyone, listen up, I don't know. I mean, I'm not afraid of the cops. They may have guns, but I figure they're not gonna shoot me in front of all these people. So I say, all the cops, all the agencies with their police agencies, sheriff's office, city police, any other federal agencies, police, see that table that says law enforcement? That's you. I want everybody to get up and go to that table. Anyone sitting at the table that says law enforcement, get up. And I start going through the groups. Now, these days, if you have this kind of experience, if any of you listeners have been in an EOC, which a lot of you I'm sure have, you know how it's supposed to go. I've been in lots of EOCs since. And you say, where is law enforcement? Where's fire? Where's utilities? Oh, okay. And they have it all identified. And then you're with your own kind, so to speak. So I get it all organized and I start explaining to them what we're going to do and how we're going to start displaying information, how we're going to start sharing information. We're going to have a daily or twice daily little sit report. And everybody's like, oh, well, okay, that sounds good, And it took a couple days probably before we were really functioning well. But we were. Now, the sad thing is that this lady never came back to work. She was so traumatized by all of this, she never came back to work. Now, I think she came back after the whole incident was over, but I don't know if she ever went back to her job. Now, this lady was ill-prepared, not because she wasn't a good person, not because she was not smart. It was because she was ill-prepared. They had just moved her over into that job from some other department. She had no background in law enforcement, no background in firefighting, no background in emergency management. Now, maybe she had taken some classes, I don't know, but she was ill-prepared. And so I have always felt bad for that lady. Now, although I kind of laugh about the situation where she's in front of all these people trying to get their attention, and she's talking in this little voice. She's talking in this really little voice. It's like, baby, you got to have some command presence. You have got to let people know that you are in charge. And you may be small, but you have got command of this situation. So it was really unfortunate for her that she just got this job running the EOC, and she didn't know what her job was, and she didn't know how to do it. So my messages or my messaging from this incident became really clear to me in that no matter what job you're going to do, whether you're a school teacher or whether you're a firefighter or a police officer or an accountant, you have got to be prepared for your job. You've got to be knowledgeable. You have to be ready to respond to whatever it is. And you've got to be flexible. One of the things that John and I have talked about, and that I think he found interesting, but I said to him one time, I said, there's no two incidents are ever the same. So, meaning no two fires are ever the same, no two medical calls are ever the same. There's always lots of similarities, but you could show up to a house fire or brush fire, whatever you want to pick. And it's the same. Imagine it's a house fire because they look, you could have a house fire one night and it's on the street and it's the, model A of that subdivision. And you have that fire and you go and you things are kind of what you'd expect. The fire, you can see where the smoke's coming from. You lay a line in a supply line for your water supply. You fight the fire. And the next night you could respond to a fire in a house, exactly the same house, exactly the same layout, but I guarantee you it's not going to be exactly the same. There's going to be some remodeling that took place inside. Maybe the guy works on Volkswagen engines and has magnesium block engines, which is a very interesting thing if you put water on a burning magnesium block motor. There's going to be any number of things that are not going to be exactly the same. So you have to be ready for things to be different. They're never, ever exactly the same. So when we train, our training can't be exactly the same. We have standard evolutions, we call it in a fire service, and you can give a standard order, about we're going to bring in a pre-connect inch and a half or inch and three quarter line, whatever size hoses you use. And we practice this stuff over and over again. But you have to practice a little bit differently because things aren't always going to be exactly the same thing that we're responding to. So in our ability to be prepared and be ready, we've got to be flexible. And so, this poor lady who was in charge of the emergency operations center, she was not ready, she was not prepared, and she wasn't flexible, through no fault of her own. But she got hired at a time, a week or 2 weeks or whatever it was before this hurricane went through her county. So for all of us, no matter what job we're in, we've got to make sure that if we're hiring someone for a job, make sure we're hiring the right person for the right job. This lady, even if she'd had the training, I don't think she was the right person for that job. I don't think she had it. I think I'd just like to make that point and emphasize that point. So whether you're in the job or whether you're hiring someone for the job, it takes training, it takes education, it takes practice, and we should all be doing that for whatever job we're in or for those folks that we're putting into positions of responsibility for tasks and jobs and whatever work you do. So that wraps up this week's story. I hope you found it interesting. I still find it interesting. I didn't laugh that much at the inappropriate moments. I think John is happy that I didn't laugh at this poor woman's discomfort and that sort of thing, and it was a shame. But it's a good lesson for all of us. Be prepared, work hard, and be flexible. So with that, I'm going to thank everybody for listening. I want to tell you how much I appreciate everyone. We're up to about 65,000 story downloads as of April 17th when I'm recording this. So that's since July. So 65,000 downloads since July of last year. It's the end, mid-April right now. So thanks for everybody's continued listening to the stories. With that, I'm going to sign off. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.